On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Alright everybody, before we begin this episode, I just want to let you know that this episode of the podcast is being sponsored by Direct Fitness Solutions. Direct Fitness had a founding principle of providing customers with quality fitness equipment, combined with an unparalleled commitment to customer service and support. Direct Fitness has worked with the MLB for 12 years, providing that same principal care to players for their homes and team complexes around the country and the DR. Direct Fitness has represented many brands in the fitness market, and Precor is their partner, which provides the equipment that matches their primary principle, quality. You can follow Direct Fitness Solutions on Instagram at DFSGetEquipped, or you can reach out to Chris Gallagher, who is the regional manager of Direct Fitness Solutions, at cgallagher@directfitnesssolutions.com. I appreciate their support of the podcast. And with that being said, let's get into the episode with Kyle. All right, everybody. I'm here with Kyle Lindsay of the Atlanta Braves organization. Kyle, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. I'm a second-year minor league strength and conditioning coach for the Atlanta Braves. My first year, I worked for our advanced rookie affiliate, the Danville Braves, in the Appalachian League. And then just this past year, my second year, worked for our GCL Braves in the Gulf Coast League.
So two things. One, everybody has an Appy League story, or just about everybody. So we might get into that in a second here, because I did a year in Bristol. So, sure. I know the Danville setting. But kind of give me your journey to this role before that, maybe where you went to school and then any internships you did, anything that kind of led you to your current spot.
Sure. So I think the start of my strength and conditioning career originated at Auburn in grad school. I'm a Auburn alum, both for undergrad and grad school. So I graduated with my bachelor's in 2012. I went back to Dallas, Texas, where I'm from, and worked in retail for a year before deciding to come back and pursue a master's degree in exercise science. And while doing that master's degree, I volunteered as a research assistant for two of our labs at Auburn School of Kinesiology. So one of those being the Sport Biomechanics Lab under Dr. Wendy Weimer, and then also for the Performance and Exercise Psychophysiology Lab, or PEP Lab, under Dr. Matt Miller. And so my experiences in those labs and getting involved in research as it pertained to sport performance started to kind of turn the engines on my interest in, you know, the science of performance and strength and conditioning in particular. So as a grad student, I started to study the NSCA textbook, and after I completed my master's in 2015, I took the CSCS exam and earned that certification, and continued to work for Auburn in the athletics department, but as an academic mentor for 1 year. And it just so happened that the Alabama State Clinic for the NSCA was being hosted in Birmingham that year in 16. And so I went up there, and that's where I was fortunate enough to meet the staff at UAB, the University of Alabama, Birmingham. And they offered me the opportunity to come up and learn from them and be an intern. So that kind of got my foot in the door. I went up to Birmingham, Alabama, and worked as an intern from August 2016 until May of 2017. So they were gracious enough to let me be an intern for two semesters, which I know the typical time is only really a semester. So I was very fortunate, and they were very gracious to let me kind of be a long-term intern. And I was under Stuart Young, who happened to be the baseball strength and conditioning coach there at the time. He's now at University of Kansas. But so that was kind of my first dip, not only into strength and conditioning, but also into baseball as a strength coach. And then from 2017, I went from UAB to TCU under Zach Dakin and worked as an intern for Zach and Dom Summer from May 2017 until February 2018. And it's in February when I, well, January that of that year, 2018, I took the job with the Braves. I was called by my now boss, Mike Schofield, and left TCU to report for spring training in 2018.
So I also have TCU stories and Coach Summers and Coach Dakin, both very good guys to work under. But for our purposes here, I want to hear your best professional baseball story that you have so far. Maybe it is something from Danville. Maybe it's something from GCL. Just what's your best memory or story that you have so far?
Sure. So my best story is a Danville story. And so first year in professional baseball, working in the Appy League, and as the strength coach for the Danville Braves. And in that first year, to kind of set the stage for the story, the players and myself, so I'm the only coach involved in this situation, lived out of a hotel in Danville. And the deal was we would check in when we come home and we would check out of the hotel when we went on the road. And that was for every, you know, coming home, going out of town, we would check in and check out. So we were on the road for 6 days, about early into the season. And when we got back home, it was around midnight or close to midnight. And the players and I get to the hotel and find out from the desk clerk that they were not expecting us at that time, or that day for that matter. And so you have 25 to 30 pro baseball players and one coach without any hotel reservations. And so what happened was the manager of the hotel, and I won't give names of the hotel just for their sake, but manager had left town and I guess failed to give the login for the computer, front desk computer, to the assistant manager. So the assistant manager never received the email from our GM about the time and date in which we were going expecting to come home. And so they were completely blindsided by a bus full of athletes coming home at midnight to no rooms. And so you have me at the only coach in the group and 28 years old, working at advanced rookie, so I'm effectively the only adult in the room, so to speak, trying to corral my players, my team, talk with them, explain to them the situation, try to find out what the situation was from the desk clerk, and calling my GM at midnight to let him know what the situation is, to see if there's a way to resolve it. Somehow, some way, there were rooms after all, but it wasn't before some players were given room keys, went up to the rooms, and then came back down telling the desk clerk and myself that there were people already in their room. So you have players saying that, you have players coming back down saying, yeah, I walked into the room and there was a purse on the bed and I heard the shower running. Or I had another player, we were even talking about it today, reminiscing how he tried to open the door and someone yelled at him that they were in there. So, that was kind of my first dip, my first real experience into pro, you know, the minor league grind, so to speak, and Appy League in particular. So,
like I said, everybody's got an Appy League story, man.
Yeah, no, and you know, it's just, yeah, you know, I've had responsibilities before, but that was definitely probably the trial by fire. In terms of kind of trying to wrangle everyone together and solve that situation. So unfortunately, everyone got a room, including myself, but I don't think it, by the time I got into my room and got to bed, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. So,
yeah, nothing screams welcome to professional baseball, and in particular rookie ball, quite like that. So, you were the strength coach of the year this year in the GCL. First and foremost, congratulations on that. I've said it many, many times. It's a peer voted award. So something you're doing is sticking out to your peers, and I want to know what it is. What are you doing that's making you so successful?
You know, truth be told, I'm still not sure. I especially in GCL, where a lot of the games are really show and go. You get on the bus, you arrive, you warm up your players, they warm up their players, and you play the game and then go home. So, you know, you don't have maybe the downtime that you do at other maybe full season teams where you can really get to just hang out and talk shop with other strength coaches. So I guess I'd like to think that maybe because when I leave warm up, you know, I interact well with my players. Most times I try to do the warm up with my players. I like to run through it myself because I always, you know, I want my players to see that I'm willing to do what I ask them to do on a daily basis. And so, it holds me accountable as well as them. And so, I'd like to think that's what it was. I'm just very fortunate that they saw my peers saw something in me that was worthy of the award. So.
Yeah, I got you, man. I had a coach growing up who was kind of like that. He had the belief that, hey, if I make you do something, I have to be able to do it. And there were days where, like, he wouldn't do it with us, but then we'd call him out and be like, you can't do this, you can't run this. And he'd come out and he'd do it with us, and usually he would smoke us. And then we kind of like, okay, we get it. Like, this guy's in good shape and he can take care of it. So I always took that lesson from him was, you know, if I ask somebody to do something, I should be able to do it myself. Maybe not to the level they do, but at least be able to do it.
Sure, yeah. I'm like, you know, I'm not a professional athlete by any means. My baseball career ended in Little League, I'm afraid. So, I try my best to keep myself in shape, and running with my athletes certainly helps that. So,
yeah, and then clearly your peers are noticing that as well. And like I said, congrats again. Do you have anything that you think a strength and conditioning coach defines success, maybe in general or more specifically in pro ball? Is there anything that you think makes a strength coach successful?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. In general, I would say it's, and this goes back to maybe running with the athletes, is being invested in your athletes emotionally, socially, just personally. There's a line that I've heard a couple times now just in the short few years that I've been in strength and conditioning about people don't care how much you know, and so they know how much you care. And so you can have all the book knowledge and all the programming knowledge in the world, but if you don't view your ball players as people first and athletes second, then, you know, I think a lot of that kind of, you know, just goes out the window. And so I've always made an effort to get to know my players on a personal level, whether that is usually the way that tends to work for me is I never really ask about work-related things. So in this case, baseball-related things, first thing in the day. And so I ask, you know, how's your family? How's your parents? How's your girlfriend? And that's something that when I worked on the academic side of athletics and the college level, I would do the same there. I wouldn't ask how classes are going. I'd ask, you know, how's your family? How was your spring break? How was your fall break? And so getting to just know your athletes on a personal level, especially at the pro level where they may have fiancés or wives or kids, you know, a lot of that ultimately affects sometimes what their performance is like in the weight room or on the field. So I think being invested in your athletes first and foremost is, to me, the biggest characteristic of a successful strength coach.
Yeah, I'm on board completely with you there, man. The thing is, we spend so much time with them that there are opportunities to learn about them outside of just being baseball players or professional athletes or, you know, in the academic setting, like you said, just being students, like they are all people and they all have their issues away from the field or the classroom, that if we can kind of help them sift through those, they're going to come to us more for other things in the actual weight room setting.
Absolutely.
So what do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
You know, I'm not sure, and maybe this is just because I've not been in the field long enough to really develop any kind of ideas that might be considered unorthodox, but I can't really recall anything I believe in strength and conditioning that I'm maybe would be considered crazy for believing. I'd really look back to the running with athletes, and the reason I say that is I don't know, and I can't really say how many coaches at the pro level will run, you know, pulls with their pitchers or run the sprint work with their position players, but I know it's maybe not as common at the collegiate level, and that's really where I started to do that in my second internship at TCU. I began to really just run the conditioning with my athletes, and you know, it's not something I have seen personally at that level, and so it simply carried over for me into pro ball. And so but again, it goes back to, you know, I want to be able to show them that I'm willing to do the same things that I ask them to do. And so I think as a coach, if you're physically capable of running with your athletes, it's something worth doing. I don't always want to be kind of just on the sidelines watching. I want to be involved, at least in a time and place where it's appropriate. So I'm not going to squat and do my lift while the players are lifting, because I want to be able to cue them correctly. I want to be able to watch and make sure everything is going well for them, for safety reasons, for training reasons. But something like running, where, you know, I can get away with doing it with them, in that way, and in doing so, encourage them. You know, that's, I guess, a coaching philosophy that I stand by, that, you know, may or may not be something that other coaches do.
Yeah, I think especially you'll see at the higher levels too, is sometimes guys just need a little kick in the pants and need a little fire lit under them. Yeah. And so they'll be like, I don't want to run. And you say, all right, I'll jump in with you. And you end up being the pace setter. And you'd be surprised, like, the competitive aspect of them is like, I'm not letting this strength guy, this meathead, beat me in this. And then all of a sudden the effort increases a little. So it's, like you said, there's a time and a place for it. It doesn't have to be all the time, but every once in a while, you know, you spark a little motivation in your athletes, so be it.
Yeah, no, it's, and you know, and being in GCL this year, you know, there's a lot of times where we needed motivation to run. And, you know, it, like I said before, it keeps me accountable and, for that matter, healthy too, so.
True, yeah. Good for everybody then. So do you have any advice for others in the field, maybe young coaches looking to get in, or even older coaches that have been around a while?
I think the main advice I would give to other coaches is just to be yourself. And the reason I say that is because I think it's tempting in this age of social media to want to mimic other coaches that we identify as being successful on social media. You know, whether it's on Instagram or Twitter, it's becoming more of an outlet for strength coaches to kind of share ideas, to share opinions, to share exercises. And that's not a bad thing. But, you know, it does introduce, I think, that temptation to place value or the merit of a particular exercise or training philosophy on the basis of, well, so-and-so tweeted about this, or, well, I like this exercise because, you know, this person, you know, posted it the other day on Instagram. And so that's not to say that it's something that I would avoid, you know, being on social media and doing that. I think it's a great avenue, and it's been a great way for us to kind of put our presence out there as a profession. But I think that's also the temptation that exists for a lot of guys, because you always hear them throw out a name of a particular person in association to why they do one thing versus another. So that would probably be the main thing that comes to mind. I think for someone entering the field, and I say this because of my experience, you know, the sooner that you can get experience, the better. I'm very fortunate to have gotten in the field at all, because I didn't get my certification and get my foot in the door until after I'd finished my master's program. And so I had already finished college. If I could go back and rewind time, I would have liked to have done those internships while in college. Instead, I started them when I was 26, 27 years old. And for almost a two-year span, uninterrupted span, I worked as a unpaid intern. So, in your late 20s, it's not really what you expect or would like to do, but it's what got me to where I'm at. And I'm very, very blessed and very fortunate that it worked out. So,
yeah, I'm definitely on board with that. My undergrad, there wasn't a huge aspect of strength and conditioning. We didn't have a strength coach at the college at the time. And that's probably the biggest thing for me, is if I could go back, I would just start getting experience earlier. I got very lucky that when I went to grad school, the head guy there was very open with me and took me in and, you know, threw me into the fire, and I learned very quickly. But I would definitely say same thing, is the sooner you can start getting experience, the better. And then the social media stuff, I agree 100%. It's a double-edged sword, in the sense that we can put ourselves out there, but there's no context to putting yourself out there. So if you see somebody doing an exercise, well, in their particular training program with that particular person, it might be the right exercise, but that doesn't mean it's the right exercise for every single person just because you saw somebody who's well-known doing it.
Sure. Yeah, it could be, you know, they could be a college, an NCAA Division I coach for women's soccer or men's golf, and, you know, they're going to have different exercises that they, you know, need to do for their population, you know, 18 to 22-year-old college students that, you know, may or may not be applicable to someone working in professional baseball. And so, like you said, the context is sometimes removed from that video. You're looking at it through a keyhole of a door and not getting the bigger picture of what their program is. And so that, you know, a lot of times that can be a trap we fall into. So,
yeah, I think it needs to be more of a conversation starter. You know, if you see somebody doing something, you reach out to that person and get the context for yourself, versus just, oh, I saw it on Twitter, I'm going to start doing this with everybody, because that's not necessarily the right way to go about it.
Sure.
So do you have any continuing education resources that you'd like to recommend? Maybe some books to read or seminars you might be attending in the off season, maybe podcasts you're listening to?
Yeah, I'll confess, I still haven't really got on board with podcasts. That's not to say that I don't like them. I haven't gotten into a regular habit of listening to podcasts. The only time I usually do is if one is recommended to me or if I know someone who has done one. And so I tend to just be someone who likes books and likes to be able to read from, you know, what sources, you know, maybe research journals or articles from peer-reviewed research. So in terms of books, science-based, or I guess strength and conditioning-based, Super Training, you know, gets recommended a lot, and that's one I still stand by and that I like. I enjoy Anatomy Trains for the reasons why it kind of gets you away from thinking of muscles in isolation and thinking of them in terms of larger groups. In terms of books outside of strength and conditioning, because I think the tendency sometimes is for people, not necessarily in our profession, but in general, we will read books related to our craft, but maybe not in other areas. Books on leadership, I like Legacy about the All Blacks team in New Zealand. I am currently reading I'm drawing a blank, but Legacy. And so In terms of seminars, I would recommend anything from the NSCA. And of course I have my certification through them, but the NSCA conference, or the state clinic, I should say, for Alabama that was hosted in Birmingham, was the reason why I got into strength and conditioning. That was where I got to meet the staff at UAB and got my foot in the door. And so, you know, those opportunities to network, whether it's through the NSCA or the ACSM, the American College of Sport Medicine, I think those are great opportunities for people interested in the profession to both network and to kind of learn information from others that may or may not think like they do. So,
yeah, right on, man. And honestly, the beauty with podcasts is you don't necessarily have to follow one specifically. If there's somebody that you like to listen to, you can just search them and find them on different podcasts. So that is definitely a different route to use instead of just subscribing and just listening to every episode. And then with the books, I do like the idea of reading training books, but then reading things outside of just training as well, and kind of diversifying that way. So Legacy was a really, really good one. So I'd like to do a lightning round with you. I know you had a long day. You're at the complex now. If you have time, it's just four questions. You got time for me?
Yeah, sure.
All right, first one. Who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
I probably have to go back to the coaching staffs, both at UAB and TCU. So Stuart Young, my intern supervisor at UAB, who, again, I says is now at Kansas. Stacy Torman, who was the director there, TCU. So Zach Dakin, my intern supervisor there, Don Summer, and then my current supervisors as well. So Mike Schofield, our coordinator for strength and conditioning, Ryan Driscoll, who is our assistant coordinator. So, it's hard to pin down on one person. I think you're really the product of the people that have been in your life and kind of just that culmination of all those different voices and people that have guided you in the direction that you go in now. And I believe that's the case for me. So,
yeah, I'm on board with you there, man. One piece of equipment to train with, what would you choose?
Barbell or squat rack, if you will.
Okay. Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
I would probably go with a time in my second internship, so at TCU, where, because like at UAB, I was given the opportunity to be there longer than just the normal single semester. And so with that came new responsibilities to kind of be a lead intern, kind of help lead other interns that were coming in after me, either in the fall semester or the spring, and being trusted with guiding them, whether it's the onboarding process, showing them kind of the ropes of what our daily responsibilities were, helping teach some who weren't maybe FMS certified already how to perform the screen. So just being given or being trusted with that responsibility and having some leadership responsibility, not over other interns, while I myself was still an intern, was one of the more rewarding opportunities for me, because that to me indicated that I was doing something right, or I was doing something that was then recognized by the coaching staff.
Right on. Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
This is an easy answer for me. So paleontologist.
Really?
And the reason I say it's easy is because before I got into strength and conditioning, for every July for 9 years, I used to go up to South Dakota, and I would work with a museum called the Black Hills Institute of Geological Research, and I would dig up dinosaur bones with them. I say South Dakota, they're based in South Dakota. I worked with them in a field in Wyoming. And so that was something that I wanted to do in college. Things changed, but I never really lost a passion for it. And I still think a lot of the things I learned in that field, I still use. So I learned anatomy that way. You know, I kind of joke often that I have a master's degree where I specialize in biomechanics, but I never took anatomy as an undergraduate student. I learned all my anatomy from digging up bones out in Wyoming. And there's another museum I used to do prep work for in the lab. So the person you see behind the glass with the dental tools. And when my supervisor there found out I was going back to grad school to do biomechanics, proceeded to dump a box full of dinosaur bones from Alaska onto my desk and told me to put them back together. So, you know, it's the bones are a little different size and shape working as a strength coach in baseball, but, you know, the same principles of physics apply. You know, it's still muscle, it's still tissue. So, you know, it's still something I enjoy. In fact, this offseason so far, I actually went back up there to South Dakota for the first time in 9 years to just see everyone and to just kind of keep those connections.
All right, I'm going to piggyback off of that and give you one more question. Was there sure. anything really cool that you found while you were out there? Anything like worth noting that you're proud of that you found or anything like that?
So I guess for me, the cool thing to see this past trip, so when I went back a couple weeks ago, was they have on display at the museum a femur from the dig site from that was still in the ground in my first year. So that would have been 13 years ago. This femur was in the ground. I'm 5'10". This femur is about 5'8", 5'9". And, you know, weighs upwards of 300 pounds or so. It takes, you know, four or five people to lift it out of the ground and put it in the back of a pickup. And so when I went back up there a few weeks ago, it was on display in the museum. And I know it was that specific bone because it was they didn't put out a replica, is I guess what I'm trying to say. They wanted to put out the real bone so that museum guests could, you know, touch it and see what a real bone feels like. So it was just kind of a cool thing to see after, you know, 16 years to just see that. So
yeah, that's really cool, man.
So a little unique, you know, I guess fun fact. You know, it's one that I've done it for so long that I don't really think much of it, or I don't think twice about it. You know, and so I kind of forget sometimes that it's not often you meet someone who digs up dinosaur bones, especially someone who works in a completely different different industry.
Yeah, you're definitely the first one for me. So it's way cooler to me than it might sound to you. So, but hey, I appreciate you coming on, spending some time with me, man. If the listeners want to get in touch with you, where can we get more? Are you on social media or is there a better place?
I am on social media. I will admit that I am bad at social media. I have 3 pictures on my Instagram, and I'm not great at tweeting. So the best way to reach me is definitely going to be through email, which is just kyle.lindsey, and Lindsey is spelled with an E, so L-I-N-D-S-E-Y at braves.com.
Perfect. Well, like I said, I appreciate you coming on, man, and we'll be catching up real soon.
All right. Sounds good. I appreciate your time.
All right, everybody. That concludes this episode with Kyle. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. I really appreciate him opening up and sharing with us what makes him so successful. 3 things that I took from Kyle in this episode: be invested in your players, get experience as early as you can, and avoid the temptation to mimic others from social media. Before we end this episode, I just want to give one more quick shout out to our sponsors, Direct Fitness Solutions. Give them a follow on Instagram or check out their website for more info. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.